Are you going to keep me if he doesn't pay you? She asked, looking small, tucked up on the inn's bed. Jeb held out his right hand.
I swear, whether your dad pays me or not, you are going home after I speak to him.
Click!
Jeb felt the promise click into place inside him like a lock. He felt as though he couldn't renege on it if he wanted to. Thankfully, it was a promise he was happy to follow through on. Jeb paused with his hand on the door handle, a thought occurring to him. Screwing over her dad was going to hurt her too, possibly more than it did her dad. Serene, he said, turning to face her.
Yeah?
Would you rather live in blissful ignorance, or suffer through a painful reality if it allowed you to take control of your life? She watched him silently from beneath the covers.
I want control,
she said, barely audible. Okie dokie, Jeb said, tipping his hat before heading out. He left the girl there and clumped down a few blocks to Garland Grenor's place of business, an eyesore of a building that dominated the local architecture by a full story. Jeb watched as a wagon full of what appeared to be rocks covered in sticky black oil were hauled into the warehouse on the bottom floor. Jeb shrugged and followed the wagon in.
Hold up. Who the hell are you?
Brawny Milas asked as Jeb entered the building. He had a flat nose and his nostrils flared out as he crossed his arms, the very picture of businesslike intimidation.
I got news Mr. Grenor is going to want to hear. It's about his daughter, Jeb said.
The Milas eyed him for a moment, then nodded, motioning for Jeb to follow him.
Right this way, he said, glancing over his shoulder. I hope you know that if this is a waste of his time, I'm going to have to beat you within an inch of your life.
Understood. I fully expect that Mr. Grenor will get what he needs out of our meeting. A goddamn wake-up call. You don't use your daughter as collateral on a debt and expect a happy ending. You just don't do it.
Jeb's fingers brushed the two letters in his vest pocket, absentmindedly making sure they were still there. There was the one Smartass had found in the man's own safe and the one Jeb had looted out of Svek's personal chest. Together, they painted a pretty damning picture.
Here,
the Milas said, opening the door for Jeb to enter. Jeb strode through, back straight, and the hulking Milas followed a moment later, cutting off any chance Jeb had of running away should things sour too badly. Directly in front of Jeb was the man who'd stolen his silver coin, shuffling through papers with a pair of bifocals hanging on his nose.
What's this, then?
Mr. Grenor said, scowling at the interruption. His eyes flickered over Jeb dismissively, not showing a hint of recognition. The homeless bum in the street might as well be an entirely separate person.
Says he's got news about Miss Rain, the bruiser said.
What are you? Another messenger come to raise the ransom again? I thought I already told you if you did, I'd pay for an Imperial forcer to be dispatched.
I'm a bounty hunter, Jeb said with a shrug. Mr. Grenor's eyebrow cocked.
A human bounty hunter? Please escort this man from the premises.
Jeb felt a heavy hand clamped down on his shoulder.
I went through the impossible tutorial, Jeb said before he could be dragged out.
Oh, one of those?
Jeb saw cold calculus flash across the man's gaze.
Wait there a second, Lise.
Garland opened his desk and winced a moment as he clipped a familiar golden earring onto his earhole.
Say that again.
My name's Jebediah Trapper, Jeb said. And one of the survivors of the impossible tutorial.
Garland's brows rose.
Interesting. What level are you?
39. Plus I consumed at least half a dozen attribute potions and earned a similar number of accolades.
Jeb met the man's gaze.
I am absolutely confident I can return your daughter to you.
And the kidnappers?
The greedy Keegan asked, eyes glittering with barely constrained joy at the sudden solution to his problems.
I'm more than capable of killing the likes of them. They won't leave that mountain alive.
What do you want for it?
Grenor asked. I don't know what the final total they would have tried to extort out of you would be, Jeb said. He'd seen the first note, but criminals tended to move goalposts. But I will return your daughter to you for 250 bulbs. And afterward, Jeb said with a business smile, Zvek and his pirates won't be drawing breath.
I could have hired a team of mercenaries to exterminate those pirates for that much, Garland said, scowling at Jeb.
Really? I doubt it.
I'm not paying you in advance.
I wouldn't ask you to pay me before I delivered your daughter, Jeb said.
All right then, Mr. Gnorr said. It's a deal.
Return your daughter, no more pirates, Jeb said, extending his hand.
For 250 bulbs,
Mr. Gnorr said, clasping his bony fingers around Jeb's own. A little spark seemed to travel up through Jeb's arm and settle in his heart, and he knew the deal had been struck. Excellent. Jeb smiled at the asshole, and the asshole smiled back. At least Jeb thought he was smiling. It was hard to tell with a Keegan. Either way, there were bared teeth all around. Jeb turned and left the office, casually clomping down the street back towards his room at the inn. Serene was sitting in bed, stabbing the post with Jeb's shaving knife. Jeb was just happy she hadn't disappeared. If he didn't deliver the girl, his deal would fall through and he'd get no impact whatsoever.
All right, we're good to go, he said as he entered. Do you want to get supper or eat something before we go to your dad's place?
Serang gave him a blank stare.
No supper?
She shook her head.
All right, it'll look a little unnatural getting you home this fast, but I am pretty amazing. Get your coat.
Serang got her coat and the two of them left the room.
Already?
Mr. Gnorr asked, his slack jaw nearly bumping Serene's head. Jeb was standing in the same office where he'd been roughly half an hour ago, this time with the addition of Serene Gnorr, who had glomped her father in the picture of an innocent hug of pure relief. It made Jeb's stomach turn, but he couldn't play his hand right out of the gate. The rules of a deal, according to Smartass, were that he had to allow the other party a chance to repay the debt in good faith.
My payment? Jeb asked.
I don't have that kind of cash on hand. I'll have to liquidate some stock. Give me a week.
Jeb's eyes narrowed, calculating. The businessman was obviously wary of Jeb's strength now. His posture was less confident, more guarded. His security guard stood an extra step farther away from Jeb, closer to the door. If Jeb pushed for his payment right now, Garland might actually cave and give Jeb something of equivalent value. It felt strange to say, but Jeb actually wanted the other party to act in bad faith. It was the only way Jeb could claim an intangible asset to raise his mist. If he gave the guy a week, the odds were actually pretty good the businessman's fear of Jeb's uncanny speed and power would dull, and the desire to hold on to his money would grow. That's just how scumbags worked. Since Jeb had already delivered, the ball was in his court. He had Garland Gnorr by the balls. The guy just didn't know it yet. Now I just need to give him a time and place for a clever ambush to put me at a disadvantage.
Here, Saturday after next, 1 p.m, Jeb said. I'll be coming for my payment then.
Generous, thank you. I'll have your money then,
Garland Gnorr said before the two shook hands again, both of them hoping money wouldn't change hands, albeit for different reasons. Jeb walked out of the office and back out onto the street, ignoring the people gawking at him. They wouldn't meet his gaze even if he looked at them anyway. As soon as he was out of sight of the building, Jeb went back to limping, clutching his aching side as he returned to his room. He didn't have to pretend to be a badass anymore, which was a freaking godsend. He'd had to have gained some body, because Jeb was fairly sure he should have collapsed a long time ago. Jeb winced as he sat down on his bed, favoring his stomach wound. Once he was comfortable, he tugged the uncomfortable ring off and inspected it. It had been a long day, and all he wanted to do now was pass out and deal with everything 17 hours from now. But he wanted to know whether the deal he'd made with the pirates really had an effect, or if he was simply running on the placebo effect. Experimentally, Jeb put the ring up to his lips and blew through it. Thick gray mist billowed outward, creating a roiling cloud in the middle of the room. It seemed to hang there, waiting for something to come across it. Jeb stood up and walked into the cloud. The gray mist sank into his body, causing his flesh to glow with red inner light just as it had a few hours before, highlighting his bones. A flash of light passed over his eyes and the mist leapt back out of his body, forming into a status window. Jebediah Trapper, Mystic Trapsmith, level 39. Accolades. Crusher's Brawn, Siren's Cunning, Rub-Rub-Rub-Use Mysteries, Gresh's Subtlety, Innovator, Vangross's Power. Body, 21, 9. Mist, 71, 7. Nerve, 26, 9. Abilities. Mystic Trigger. Accolade pending. Langross's power suspended due to multiple instances. Awaiting resolution. Attention! This user has been flagged for exclusion from the system by executive order.
4 in body. That explains why I feel like a teenager, and I'm not bleeding out. 2 in mist and 1 in nerve.
Was that because of the letter? Did the pirates not have any actionable information other than that?
Jeb had mostly profited financially from the pirates' deaths, and, as already stated, all material wealth fell under the body category.
Smartass?
Yeah?
The fairy asked, poking her head out of his pocket. Is that a normal increase? 4, 2, and 1? Jeb said, pointing at each of his attributes in turn.
It doesn't feel like a lot. If I took their lives as my payment for the deal, shouldn't I have gotten a bigger portion of their attributes? Some of the people there had at least 30 body. Hell, Speck's skull brushed off a 44.
How do I explain this?
Smartass said, tapping her chin.
Your sticky impact can only pick up a certain amount of impact before it simply can't pick up anymore. It's related to the size of your impact. A small ball of impact can only have a small amount packed in around it before it loses the ability to adhere more.
That makes sense. Like a lint roller, Jeb said, nodding.
So a lot got wasted. Oh well, a hell of a lot better than nothing.
When you're totally full up, you have to take some time to convert the new layer of impact into sticky impact before you can take more.
That's not going to take another 100 days, is it? Jeb asked, thinking about his plans for next weekend.
Should only take about a week, since the foundation is already laid. It'll get faster as your impact grows. The oldest fae can make deals at a speed that'll boggle the mind.
And once that layer is complete, I'll be able to accept more impact in one sitting? Jeb asked.
Exactly.
What about the distribution? Jeb said, pointing at the status window again. Is that because there was simply more body-flavored impact up for grabs in the Fate Dimension than anything else?
Smartass eyed him sideways.
You're a quick study.
So I've heard, Jeb said, slipping the ring back on his finger.
The status window blinked out of sight as soon as the cold metal interior touched Jeb's skin. He carefully lay down on the bed and put his legs up, kicking off his new boot.
I'm going to try and get some sleep, Jeb said, setting his arms at his sides.
Normally, he'd like to rest them on his stomach, but the angry, swollen stitching made that a non-starter.
Jeb glanced at a hairline fracture in the ceiling, rubbing the scar on his palm with his thumb.
He peered at the chair blocking the door, the bell attached to the window. He felt the gun bumping into his skull under his pillow.
He didn't think Grenor would try to have him killed, but Jeb would rather be paranoid than dead.
He closed his eyes, focusing on the throb of the stab wound in his gut aching to the beat of his heart. Jeb slept like a baby.
The next day was a whirlwind of signing papers he couldn't read, getting his newfound wealth safely insured and tucked away in the city vault. In a world where people could shoot fireballs out their asses, a box made of solid steel wasn't quite enough protection to ensure no one steals your cash. So, the bank itself was guarded by a Keegan security guard who was reputed to be a level 84 mindraker. Whatever the hell that was. The bank even had a Hall of Fame, a glass case where keepsakes from previous would-be bank robbers were housed. It seemed a little macabre to Jeb, but out in the frontier, it seemed like deterrent was 9/10 of the law. After sorting and selling the substantial amount of pirate booty, Jeb was left with 180 bulbs.
and a backpack full of lenses they had stolen from local prospectors, with a handful of bulbs apiece. When Jeb asked around, he found out that the term bulbs was a reference to a psychedelic mushroom that grew in egg-like clusters. They were highly prized among mist users in the past, and had been worth about an ounce of gold apiece before they were gathered to extinction. Jeb got a little annoyed when people kept asking him who he was selling the lenses to, assuming he was going to pass them off to a major corporation or noble house in exchange for a quick buck. It was apparently common sense that a plebeian couldn't make use of lenses. Jeb had no idea why he would do that. The backpack was like a little slice of earth. There were a handful of mountain river lenses that made icy cold water on command, several large stone andesite lenses. Jeb made a boulder out of one by accident. A bunch of cedar lenses that grew saplings to trees depending on the mist injected into them. A few flake-sized gold ore lenses. Some pebble-sized iron ore lenses. Copper ore lenses and a pinky-sized wolfram lens. There were several animal lenses. A hare lens, a couple different kinds of birds and squirrels, along with a single buck lens about the size of a child's fist. It looked like it was carved from lumpy antler, sloughing off coarse deer fur that disappeared as it fell away. First, the obvious question. Why on God's green earth was a system built around gold as currency able to continue with magical lenses that could literally spit out a nearly limitless supply of gold? When Jeb asked around, the answer was basically, it wasn't limitless. A single lens about the size of a golf ball could spit out thousands of tons of material before it eventually degraded. So, rather than search the hills for a gold mine, it was far easier for prospectors to find a gold lens, which could pump out gold until it busted. In essence, a lens and a mine were the same thing. They occurred at similar rarities and produced a similar amount of product before being exhausted. A mine required a huge amount of infrastructure and labor, which meant time, materials, labor, and workers. Workers that had to be paid. A lens just needed a mist engine and a way to process the output. The only people who knew how to do that were aristocrats. The ease with which mist produced raw materials drove the profit margin of an honest-to-God actual mine through the ground. This forced most value to be placed in the amount of labor that went into making and shipping goods and services. Trading bulk material back and forth was almost unheard of unless it was in the form of lenses. The whole conversation gave Jeb a headache as he tried to unwind the strange dynamics of the Empire's economics. Finally, he decided he didn't care. Jeb was now the proud owner of several mines, slash logging camps, slash hunting grounds he could carry around with him wherever he went, and he had the skills to take full advantage of them. That was good enough for him. Jeb earmarked 50 bulbs for the smear campaign against Garland Grenor, another 50 for starting his own business, and the rest for enjoying his week. Approximately $80,000, American monies, to blow between now and the weekend after next. Oh my, whatever will I spend my money on? The time between Thursday and the Saturday after next passed by in a manic blur of enthusiastically supporting the local community. The leisure time wasn't all good, as it gave Jeb plenty of time to think in between. Plenty of time to stare at the ceiling and wonder if all this craziness was actually real or not. Plenty of time to crawl inside his own head. Jeb was just starting to feel the spike, making it hard for him to sleep indoors again by the time the next Saturday rolled around. Which was why Jeb was so happy when he opened the door to Garland's office and found himself face to face with the Imperial Enforcer, arms crossed, one hand brushing her weapon. It was the same Milas woman he'd seen executing that Reaper a couple weeks ago. She was about 6.5 feet tall, big shiny horns, black hair with the typical muscle mass of a Milas. Her dark lips were full and downturned in a faint scowl as she eyed him in return. Her gaze lingered on Jeb's pig leg for a moment. Below her face. Jeb found his eyes wandering, so he tore his eyes away and directed them at the others. Zlesk flanked the enforcer, the lawman looking a little concerned and a little angry. At his desk, the Keegan steepled his fingers, seemingly pleased with his ambush. By his side, his daughter was sitting, her expression one of concern, glancing between Jeb and her father.
Pay attention, Zeraine. This is how you deal with these kinds of people.
he said, motioning to Zlesk and the enforcer.
Jeb, Mr. Gnor says you tried to extort him? Zlesk asked.
Chapter 7. Punitive Remuneration. Jeb scanned the room. As far as ambushes went, it was a pretty decent one. Jeb was curious how Garland had brought an Imperial enforcer into the office, but the how didn't matter a whole lot right now. The enforcer was the major hurdle here. Zlesk was agreeable, to an extent. The biggest problem was that Jeb had already spilled the beans about being in the Impossible Tutorial, which wasn't something he wanted to make known to the government just yet. And yet, there was a government fixer with the authority to execute punishment on site without a trial or any kind of due process. In all likelihood, the story had already been spread to her. Can't change what's already done, Jeb thought, gaze flicking to the smug Milas bodyguard. The man didn't seem nearly as intimidated by Jeb as he had been last time. Probably because they had a high-level bruiser here to hold their hands.
Jeb? Mr. Gnor says you tried to extort him? Zlesk asked.
Jeb reoriented on Zlesk. Extortion is defined as obtaining something through force or threat of force. There was no mention of using force, nor do I have any intention of doing so, Jeb said, slipping Svek's earring out of his pocket and holding it up where they could see it. If you like, we could use a few truth seekers to mediate this dispute, Jeb said. If mine won't do, I believe Mr. Gnor has one in his desk. It didn't really matter if Garland said yes or not. It was already clear he didn't intend to pay Jeb. Now it was a fun little dance before Jeb got his mist.
An excellent suggestion. I think a healthy dose of the truth should clear things up, Garland said, fishing through his desk and coming out with a similar earring.
Sure will.
Use mine, please, Mr. Callis. There's no telling what kind of alterations that knave may have done to his.
The enforcer glanced at the earring a moment, pursing her lips as she frowned.
You understand that if I put this on, I will be acting in an official capacity as an Imperial enforcer, and will immediately arbitrate a settlement to the best of my ability, and the two of you will be required by law to abide by my decision.
Understood, Jeb said.
I understand,
Mr. Gnor said.
All right then, let's get this over with,
Bresh said with a sigh, clipping the earring on and addressing the two of them.
Unless otherwise prompted, you will answer my questions with short yes or no answers. First, Mr. Trapper, did you extort Mr. Gnor?
No.
Mr. Gnor, did you agree to pay Mr. Trapper 250 marks in exchange for the return of your daughter?
Yes.
Rush raised a brow.
Unless I'm missing something, the matter is clear. Is there anything either of you would like to add to this?
Jeb stayed silent, allowing Garland to keep digging the hole deeper.
This man claimed the 5 bulbs held in escrow for the rescue of my daughter at the Hunters Association, Garland said, only minutes before he met me to offer to return her for 50 times the original reward. He attempted to defraud me by charging again for a bounty that had already been completed and claimed. Mr. Trapper, is that true?
Which part? Jeb said.
All of it.
No.
Truth. What? You said you would kill all the pirates and return her. That was already done. What else could it be other than fraud?
Bresh glanced at Jeb and nodded.
Make your case.
If you recall correctly, I said that after your daughter was returned, the pirates would no longer be drawing breath. Not that I would kill them. In this way, I was not defrauding you by charging multiple times for the same rescue. I was charging you 250 bulbs to walk her back to your office. The fact the pirates wouldn't draw breath afterwards was simply a statement that was true.
Truth,
That's kidnapping!
Garland shouted, earning a miffed glare from the enforcer.
He held my daughter for ransom!
Mr. Trapper, did you have any intention to retain Miss Grenor should her father refuse to pay?
No.
Truth.
Jeb found the way the tycoon ground his teeth amusing. It's not illegal for a street vendor to charge 250 bulbs for their product, is it? Jeb asked. I don't see any reason why I could not charge that for the armed escort of a young girl.
The disputed payment is 250 bulbs? That's 50 times the original reward?
Vresh asked. Yes.
Mr. Grenor, the original reward for the rescue of Miss Grenor was 5 bulbs?
Vresh asked, her expression souring as she glanced at the Keegan.
Yes, what of it?
He asked, missing the frown blooming on his daughter's face as she sat right next to him.
Nothing actionable, Vresh said, glancing back at Jeb. Am I correct in assuming the agreement you had with Mr. Grenor was entirely verbal?
Yes, and a handshake. Vresh massaged her temples for a moment.
From what I have observed, Jebediah Trapper committed no actionable offenses against Mr. Grenor, beyond being staggeringly misleading, which isn't a crime.
But
by that same token, Imperial law does not enforce verbal contracts below the value of 2 silver. By Mr. Trapper's admission, the service provided was a 2-block escort to Mr. Garland's place of business. The fair value of such a service falls well below small claims. Without a written contract, there is no legal impetus to enforce the outrageously inflated price.
Ha!
Garland said, clenching a fist. So, let me get this straight, Jeb said. You have no intention of paying me?
You should have gotten it in writing,
the Keegan said, radiating smug superiority. You should have thought twice about fucking me over, Jeb said. I won't be accepting apologies, Mr. Grenor.
Fine by me. Now that our business is settled, get out of my office.
Now to get my payment through other means. In order to raise his mist, Jeb needed to take something from the businessmen that packed a lot of emotional energy and intangible value. Something painful, which would diminish his impact over the course of his lifetime. Jeb had just the thing in mind.
Just a moment. Zlesk, I'm still working on picking up on your written language. Do you think you could read this aloud for me?
Jeb asked, offering Zlesk the first letter.
No? Can't it?
Jeb shoved it into the sheriff's hand.
Just read it.
He turned to Garland. I find a lot of people don't consider the value of trust as much as they should. It's a valuable currency, you know. Hard to earn, easy to lose.
Is this real?
Zlesk asked, glancing at Jeb.
Oh yeah,
Jeb grinned. Zlesk cleared his throat.
Grenor, I do not care about your mewling protestations. The situation favors us. The Stitch has dropped a veritable fortress in the form of the Split Mountains between you and your beloved mines. A fortress I own.
Blackmail!
Garland shouted at the top of his lungs, leaping to his feet.
Blackmail is the threat of exposing damaging information in exchange for money. I never threatened to release this information,
Jeb said.
Not blackmail. Punishment.
You! Sit your ass down,
Rush said, shoving the Keegan back into his seat.
I want to see where this goes.
Zlesk glanced nervously at the Imperial Enforcer and kept going.
I know how far you've overreached with your new mine. I heard it straight from your foreman's mouth before I broke his jaw. I have you by the balls, and you can do nothing to change it short of paying us our due. If you want your shiny new lenses back, you will give us no less than 2,000 bulbs in Imperial marks. However, I'm nothing if not understanding and generous. If you can convince me to accept collateral of equal value, we will allow your workers to return to the mines, such that you can gather the money needed to appease us.
That's stolen! He stole that from me!
The Kegan shouted, growing desperate.
He made it up! It means nothing!
Jeb caught it when Rush's ear twitched. Jeb adopted a playful voice.
You know, I'm pretty sure I saw your men hauling lenses into the warehouse under the office a week ago, the day I returned your daughter. What's the round trip to and from your land? 3, 5 days?
Jeb gasped.
That means that a couple days before they got past Svek's men somehow. Did they already have the collateral?
Don't! I'll pay you! Just stop!
Grenar said, struggling to reach Jeb as the Imperial Enforcer held him in place with an iron grip. Beside him, Serene Grenor's eyes were slowly growing wider, and Jeb could see the connection slowly forming in her mind. Jeb felt a deep pang of guilt for pulling the rug out from under a nice girl, but she wanted control over her fate, not blissful ignorance. So, painful or not, Jeb was going to deliver.
Oh, look at this other letter I found in Svek Pedersen's personal effects, Jeb said, pulling out the second letter.
He handed it to Zlesk. Zlesk read it over once and glanced at Serene.
Do you think perhaps we should read this some...
Read it,
Serene said. The Kegan girl was standing now, trembling like a leaf, but her voice was resolute. Resh nodded.
No, don't re...
The enforcer clapped a hand over Gnor's mouth, silencing him.
Read it, she said.
Okay, then. Zlesk cleared his throat. The collateral will be visiting the Ironseed property on the edge of town on the 14th. I'll make sure her guard is otherwise occupied. If I find any harm has come to her, I will rain down such destruction upon you that your ancestors will feel it.
You realize they were probably going to harm her, then blackmail you with this letter, right?
Jeb asked. Resh removed her hand from the guy's face.
It wasn't me,
he said, causing the truth seeker in Resh's ear to twitch.
Someone else could have done it.
Jeb and the Imperial Enforcer shared a glance, the same thought going through their heads. This guy's lost it. Jeb spotted a stack of papers on Grenor's desk and sent out a thin thread of mist, snatching one up and bringing it to his hands. Resh tensed up for a moment, watching the strand of mist.
She can see mist. Good to know.
It kind of looks like your handwriting, Jeb said, scanning the paper.
I mean, I can't read, but... Zlesk, does this look like the same handwriting?
I think you've made your point, Zlesk said, folding the two letters and putting them in his pocket.
Nah, I got one more thing,
Jeb said, glancing at the bodyguard trying to remain inconspicuous in the corner.
Hey, Mr. Bodyguard, were you the one who was supposed to watch Serene that day? If so, what exactly happened that separated you from her?
The hulking Milas turned a lighter shade of orange and glanced at Varesh before pressing himself farther back into the corner, seemingly unwilling to say anything at all.
Enough,
Varesh said, drawing the attention of everyone.
I am the law here, not you, she said. I will sort this out, and you will leave. Your role here is over.
Sure, Jeb shrugged. I got what I needed.
He glanced over at Serene.
Miss Grenor, you chose a painful truth, but I believe you'll come out stronger for it. I wish you luck in taking the reins of your destiny, and if you ever need help, visit me. I will hear you out.
Jeb nodded before spinning on his peg leg and heading out the door.
A moment later, Zlesk caught up with him as Jeb exited the doors of the first floor and burst into the dry air of the desert city.
What in the royal was that? Zlesk demanded.
The sheriff's jaw dropped as they passed a poster glued to the nearest wall. It had Garland Grenor's name and likeness on it. Underneath the picture was a short and sweet blurb reading, "I gave my only daughter to pirates. Imagine what I'll do to you."
Every 10 feet or so, there was another poster. Same picture, same message.
Jeb nodded in satisfaction as the ice pick headache began to build between his temples, scanning the poster-studded streets. 50 bulbs well spent.
"Ick, Ben,"
Zlesk muttered, stopping in his tracks.
"You really went for it."
"Had to make sure it stuck," Jeb said as he clomped along.
"But this is just overkill."
"Fucker shouldn't have stolen my silver coin," Jeb muttered.
"Is that why you did this?" Zlesk asked. "Ruined that man and his daughter?"
"The vast majority of it is because he gave his daughter to pirates," Jeb said. "I'm not that petty. But I have to admit, there's a certain satisfaction that wouldn't be there if he hadn't stolen my silver coin."
The headache kept growing until Jeb felt like someone was stomping on the back of his eyeballs with cleated shoes.
"Just gotta get back to the inn. Then I can suffer through the mist sickness in peace," he thought to himself. Before he realized it, Jeb was toppling forward, the only thing stopping his descent, the sheriff's palm. He could barely hear the Keegan's words through the throbbing in his brain.
"Ugh,"
Jeb said in response, hoping it was the right answer. His eyes were both crossed and unfocused, making it extremely difficult to see. The sheriff responded with some more words lost in the pounding of Jeb's skull, then began to haul him away. When Jeb's senses began to return to normal, he found himself sitting in a booth at the local bar, fingers clenched in a death grip around an iron beer stein.
"Why?"
"Because you stood me up last week," Zlesk said, glaring at him from the booth.
"I told you it'd be different," Jeb said with a half-hearted smile. Zlesk gave him a flat stare.
"You're lucky you got away with that stunt you pulled with Grenor," Zlesk said, shaking his head. "You were in front of an Imperial enforcer. There were so many ways that could have ended with you dead if you hadn't baited her with Garland."
"At no point in there did I tell a lie."
"Yeah, and you admitted to some very borderline criminal activities."
"They'll never stick.
You know I could have you executed for forgery anytime I want," the lawman asked, raising a brow. "I've still got you dead to rights on that one, you slippery bastard."
"Why are so many things punishable by death?" Jeb demanded.
"Because it's difficult and expensive to imprison people with classes."
"Wow, I didn't expect a straight answer," Jeb said. "Anyway, I'm sorry. The day ran long, the stab wound made me sleepier than I thought, and I forgot the beer."
Zlesk grunted.
"Don't worry. I'm saving arresting you for something more egregious than forgery. I want you to get famous first so I can get promoted."
"Don't call it forgery," Jeb said, opening a tab with the barmaid with a silver. "Call it correcting your embarrassing underestimation of what Jeb Trapper is capable of."
"You were right and I was wrong, all right?" Zlesk said with a scowl. "That's the only reason I'm not stuffing you in a cell right now."
Jeb shifted in his seat to grab his pitcher, his peg leg bumping against the leg of the table as he did.
"That gives me an idea."
"Change the subject," Jeb said, filling his first mug. "How much would a fancy prosthetic run me?"
"You could get a nice one with a false foot and a couple heavy-duty springs to smooth out your gait for a bulb or so. If you wanted something better than that, with magical support, tricks, and some kind of spell imbued into it, it could run you as much as, 50 to 100 bulbs. "You couldn't get that one made in Kalfath, though," Zlesk said. "A little city like this one isn't gonna cut it."
"What if I wanted someone to regrow it?" Jeb asked.
Good luck, Zlesk said with a chuckle. That's a matter of having a powerful healer owe you a big favor. They're in extremely high demand, and getting access to one is more a factor of being a powerful aristocrat than simply having enough money to throw at the problem.
Bzzzt. Jeb blinked as the table in front of him flickered and resolved into a video feed.
Still getting used to those, Jeb muttered, moving his beer out of the way.
The way the Empire could push video to everyone inside its borders, whether they wanted it or not, felt very dystopian.
Hi there.
Jeb blinked as Amanda's cheery face showed up in front of the camera, followed by Brett's chiseled good looks.
I'm Amanda Corvar.
And I'm Brett Corvar,
Brett said, smiling at Jeb with his stupid perfect teeth. Speak of the devil, Jeb muttered, taking a sip of his beer. The camera zoomed out to show the fitness model couple standing in front of a stack of paperwork.
We're here today to kick off a series about how to get along in this wild new world. Welcome to the first episode. I hope it helps as many people as possible,
Amanda said.
Today's episode is how you can register a homestead and apply for a 3-year tax exemption, Brett said.
3 years?
Amanda asked, eyes widening in surprise.
That's a long time.
Long enough to get on your feet anyway, Brett said, nodding. The registration is free for all humans. All you have to do is...
With a wave of his hands, Lesk dismissed the screen in front of Jeb.
How?
I'm a citizen, Zlesk said with a shrug.
Fucking traitors!
Jeb heard a human mutter across the room where the scruffy man was watching the Corvars trying to give him vital information. Sure, they were slutty sellouts, but they weren't bad people. Jeb didn't really expect anything less from them than whoring themselves out for massive success.
There were certainly more insidious things they could be doing than public service announcements. That man owes me a night with his wife,
Jeb grumbled, turning his attention back to Zlesk. The sheriff was watching him with a cocked brow. Smartass was looking at Jeb with a similar disapproving look from atop the Keegan's hat.
What is the truth? And when did you meet two humans who survived the impossible tutorial?
Where do you think? Jeb asked.
You know, lying on your census information is... punishable by death?
Jeb asked.
A serious offense,
the Keegan said, eyes narrowed to slits.
I didn't lie. You just came to the wrong assumptions.
You're gonna have to visit me and sort out that paperwork.
I don't wanna.
Jeb?
Look, I'm safer if I'm a nobody on paper, Jeb said. Due to reasons I don't really want to get into, I came out of the impossible tutorial actually weaker than when I went in. I don't want the government knowing about me just yet.
Zlesk flickered in front of him, and the table jumped in place a bit, making their beer slosh around in their mugs. Jeb blinked.
I guess you're telling the truth,
Zlesk said, taking a sip of his beer.
Did you just reflex test me?
Jeb demanded as he felt a sting on his cheek, a drop of blood rolling down his face from where the sheriff had nicked him faster than he could see.
Maybe.
Fucker.
Murder hobo.
Zlesk eyed him for a solid minute before speaking again.
All right. I'm willing to leave your census as is if you tell me how you beat Svek Pedersen and his crew.
Do you know what a cleansing wand is?
Jeb said, leaning forward. At the end of Jeb's description of the beautiful revenge, Zlesk waved off Jeb's explanation of how it had turned the pirates into burger, saying he got the idea.
That magic item hasn't been added to the list of prohibited weapons yet, but I'm going to make an executive decision as the sheriff of Kalfath and say this. I don't want to see it inside city limits. Understood?
Yes, sir.
Jeb saluted. The two of them drank in companionable silence for a couple minutes, mulling over the events of the day.
I think you should leave, Zlesk said.
Huh?
He might have bloodied his nose pretty good, but even like this, Garland Grenor's got more money and influence than you do. The only reason you pulled that off is because he didn't see it coming. You can bet your ass he's paying more attention to you now. If I were you, I'd probably lay low for a couple years. Avoid dark alleys.
Jib sat there and thought it through. If a bulb was roughly approximate to $1,000, then an assassination would probably cost anywhere between 10 and a couple hundred bulbs. If the Keegan expected he could pay the pirates $2,000 for the return of his daughter, then there was no reason to think he wouldn't be able to afford to sick people on Jeb's ass. Becoming scarce was starting to sound like a good idea. What's the enforcer going to do to him? Jeb asked, faintly hoping that would solve his pissed-off rich guy problems.
Slap on the wrist. He's a citizen. The laws are far more lenient for us.
Jeb frowned, glancing at Zlesk.
You're a citizen too, right? How do you go about becoming one? 100 bulbs and a class above level 30, or reach officer rank in the military.
So what, you buy your way in?
My family bought my brother and I citizenship when we hit level 30, Zlesk said, nodding. Rich boy? Philistine.
Well, Jeb said, standing up and dropping a few coins on the table as a tip. Thanks for the advice. I think I'll get started on it. I liked your town, and I hope to see you again. Zlesk waved dismissively as Jeb left the bar. Jeb was in his room at the inn, packing up his shit while Smartass gushed. She'd been hiding in his collar the entire time, unable to speak for fear of someone, especially the enforcer, noticing her existence.
That was so awesome! You pulled that off like a true fae. I mean, taking his daughter's trust as payment? That was... I mean...
Smartass gripped her skull before making explosion noises and spreading her hands outward.
A stroke of brilliance! It was like watching one of the ancients work!
She babbled while Jeb stuffed a backpack with all his goodies. Lenses, a change of clothes, a box of 44 ammo, and some dried food.
I see you liked it, Jeb said.
Liked it? Liked it? Do you have any idea how long it takes for typical mortal wizards to get the hang of procuring mist through bargains? And the sheer amount,
she said, holding out her arms and wiggling her fingers.
I can feel the power flowing through my veins. Kneel before me.
Smartass cackled and zoomed around the ceiling, insect wings humming as she did. Jeb glanced down at the ring. He hadn't bothered to check the profit from the Grenor job yet, but Smartass seemed pretty pleased with it, which made him curious. If the headache was any indication, it had been pretty decent. He took off the ring and used it to appraise himself. Jebediah Trapper, Mystic Trapsmith, level 39. Accolades, Kresker's Brawn, Siren's Cunning, Rub-Rub-Rub-Use Mysteries, Gresh's Subtlety, Innovator, Lagros's Power. Body, 21. 9. Mist, 71. 16. Nerve, 26. 10. Abilities, Mystic Trigger. Accolade pending. Lagros's Power suspended due to multiple instances. Awaiting resolution. Attention! This user has been flagged for exclusion from the system by executive order. 9 points in Mist, and a single point in Nerve. The equivalent of 10 levels. Not a bad start. Give Jeb a couple months to grow his mist core to the new limits, and he'd be moving a few 100 pounds easy. That, in turn, would make it easier to engage in more high-stakes deals and raise his survivability. Hold on, Jeb thought, slipping the ring back onto his finger. He had to consider why he was doing what he did. Power for the sake of power never ended well. He had to find a niche for himself. Maybe open a business where I rescue children for exorbitant prices. Jeb chuckled at the thought. Another thought. Jeb didn't have to follow the same path as before. He glanced at the immaterial insects wading through the mist settling near the floor of the inn. One of them was about the size of a large rat with a gaping maw that seemed to strain the mist like a whale's filter feeder. It passed through Jeb's food without care, leaving a wake of slightly off-color blue-tinted mist behind it. can't say I missed the hallucinations. Jib had chosen to raise his mist exclusively during the tutorial because he felt that magic would be the way to break the game, and that had been the right instinct. Now his instincts were telling him, don't overspecialize. When he had no clue what kind of trials would be heading his way, a more well-rounded approach would likely offer more ways to survive. Well, payment is typically material in nature anyway. I don't think I'll have any problem getting body, as long as I continue making deals. That settled, Jeb got back to work packing to skip town, idly itching his scalp as he did. There was a lump on his head. The fuck? Jeb thought, standing straight and searching for the lump with his fingers. Nothing. He probed, poked, and prodded his scalp with his fingers, not finding anything. That's weird. Jeb sighed, running his whole hand over his head to dispel the heebie-jeebies. There was a lump. Ice settling in his stomach, Jeb reviewed his short-term memory, prodding exactly where he had felt the strange thing. Nothing. He pulled his hand down and looked at it. The appraiser sat there on his right ring finger, looking innocent. Oh, you son of a bitch. Jeb thought, folding back his index and middle finger, using only his ring finger to prod his skull. There it is. To his ring finger, it felt like something was attached to his skull, some kind of zipper-like object just above the skin, seemingly welded in. Needless to say, his other fingers couldn't feel a thing. Jeb switched the ring to another finger and probed with that one. Still there. Definitely the ring's doing then. What the ever-loving hell is going on here? Jeb thought, poking the lump some more. It twitched. The lump on his head twitched. Okay, there's something alive in or on my skull that only exists when touched through the appraiser. I only have one question. Is this the appropriate time to panic? Knock, knock. Jeb's gaze darted to the door.
Not a great time!
Jeb said, his voice a little higher than he might have liked.
Jebediah Trapper?
The enforcer's voice came through the wood.
I'd like to speak to you about kidnapping and capital punishment.
Chapter 8. Getting out of Dodge. Jeb eyed the window, a bit of cold sweat forming on the back of his neck. He could try to make a run for it, but he was fairly sure this lady would take that as an admission of guilt. Not to mention, Jeb didn't see himself winning any kind of foot race, the inch of hardwood between them notwithstanding. Jeb took his magic finger off the magic lump and reoriented his attention. It probably wasn't going anywhere, and he had prettier fish to fry at the moment.
Yeah?
Jeb called, motioning for Smartass to hide. The fairy tucked herself behind Jeb's backpack while he clomped his way to the door. He opened the door and found himself tilting his head up slightly to meet the Milos woman's gaze. She had pale eyes with dark striations through the irises.
I half expected you to run.
She gave a faint smile.
Me too,
Jeb said, crossing his arms and straightening his shoulders.
So did I kidnap Miss Grenor by some technicality and you're here to deliver punishment?
Well, yes and no. May I come in?
Of course,
Jeb said, moving aside and leaning against the cabinet beside his bed. He didn't really have to worry about tactics or placement when the woman in front of him had enough strength to make them pointless.
So, ow!
She bumped her horns in the doorframe on the way through, and Jeb decided not to say anything.
So, yes, technically you did kidnap Miss Grenor, in the strictest sense of the word. And no, I won't be punishing you for it. The girl is better off with strangers than her conniving beak of a father, so I figured she was in less danger during a few hours spent with you. No harm, no execution.
Are you allowed to bend the rules like that?
We exercise our best judgment.
Damn, it's kind of like Judge Dredd up in here.
Kinda.
Then what was this about capital punishment? Jeb asked.
I actually wanted to talk about other kidnappings,
she said, idly rubbing the base of her horns. Other kidnappings? Jeb asked. Which have what to do with me?
You've shown a talent for dealing with impossible situations and a fondness for rescuing children. I thought you would like to put your natural inclinations to work.
To work how? Jeb asked, his nerves settling down now that he knew he wasn't going to get beheaded on national TV. The mention of impossible situations didn't escape his notice, though.
Many miles to the south, the city of Somnath is home to a rather large population of human refugees, left destitute after the stitching.
California had a lot of people, yeah, Jeb said with a shrug.
It's a dense population, crammed full of non-citizens with little to no trust in the empire. It's a breeding ground of discontent, and also...
She glanced at him meaningfully. It's a perfect hunting ground for a reaper, Jeb filled in for. Packed in like sardines, limited food, no ability to interact with local government, no help from nor trust in the law. That was a recipe for some absolutely awful conditions. Couldn't you find them? Jeb asked.
I probably could,
Vresh said, nodding.
But there are different types of reapers. Some of them subtly pick off children here and there, growing like a slow cancer. Others try to race to the finish line before they can be stopped.
What about the third kind? Jeb asked, crossing his arms. Rush's brows furrowed.
What do you mean?
The ones who hunt other reapers for the government? You've got to be gaining a lot of power from this job. Pow! Jeb's vision filled with stars for a moment, his cheeks stinging from where Vresh had slapped him. The Mila stared at him, her body giving off waves of heat that nearly made Jeb take a step back. He felt his arm hairs curl up.
Those kind of reapers exist. I am not one of them. I was born into a house that views service to the people as noblesse oblige. That includes hunting reapers. I take no joy in this duty.
Noted, Jeb said, massaging his cheek. Looks like implying someone is a reaper is a good way to get slapped. Good to know. Let me guess, the slow reapers are on the bottom of your to-do list? Jeb said.
Indeed. I could spend several days hunting down the man behind vanishing children in ones and twos. But during that time, a few more villages on the outskirts might disappear.
She met his gaze.
I can't be everywhere at once.
Harsh logic.
I do, however, have the authority to deputize individuals for specific tasks.
She said, reaching into her pocket and producing a dull metal plate. It was about 2 inches from edge to edge and fit easily into the palm of Jeb's hand. The front was emblazoned with what appeared to be the bust of a Milos woman.
Show that to the right people, and it'll open doors, she said.
And the wrong people will get me lynched, I assume? Jeb asked.
Yep. It has one additional function. If the plate is broken, I will know it, along with exactly where it was broken.
Interesting, Jeb muttered, staring down at the burnished token. What we've got here is some kind of magical bat signal. The art was sort of a stylized painting of the Enforcer, all solid black lines depicting the Milos. The simplicity of the design drew more attention to her shape, which was, in a word, curvy. And if I wasn't interested? Jeb asked, glancing back up.
I wouldn't do anything to you,
Vresh said with a shrug.
I may have to mention you to my superiors, though. You know, When the impossible tutorial reported the examinees had broken out, I missed the culprits due to the time dilation, but I remember the description of their leader.
Resh tapped her lips in thought.
A one-legged man with brown hair growing out of his face. Telekinetic Mist Corps. Mystic Trapsmith class. Odd, then, that when the humans who completed the impossible tutorial were teleported to the Emperor's palace, nobody by that description arrived. The humans themselves seemed pretty confused and distraught. Jebediah Trepper,
she said, wriggling her fingers ominously.
The one that slipped away. I wonder what my superiors would do if I were to give them your location. I'm sure they'd have a lot of questions.
Relax, Jeb said, his voice flat. I never said I wasn't interested.
Oh.
She straightened, ominous voice and fingers falling away.
God.
Jeb seemed to only be able to keep his shit together for extended periods of time if he was under a ridiculous amount of life-threatening stress. Why not save kids while he was at it? That was killing two birds with one stone. How far away is Solnath from here?
About 3 weeks' journey to the south. Follow the coast. You'll eventually come across it.
And a decent place to get lost in.
When you find the one vanishing children, deal with it yourself if you can. The mark should only be broken for emergencies that threaten the lives of hundreds, not you specifically. I'd prefer you save it for a rampaging leviathan or something.
All right, Jeb said, pocketing the mark. Then I'll make you a deal. I'll stop this reaper from killing children, probably via murder. In exchange, you don't tell anyone about me. He hoisted his backpack up and onto his shoulder. There was a tiny grunt from where Smartass was hiding in one of the pockets.
Sounds good to me. Agreed.
Resh said, folding her arms across her chest.
Click.
Jeb felt the deal settle into place and a sudden urge to travel to the south. Then, if that's all, I've got a destination in mind and something to do when I get there. Resh nodded and moved out of the way, allowing Jeb to leave the room without any further discussion. Jeb closed his account at the inn and asked for directions to the nearest caravan heading south. Kalfath's major export had been crude oil lenses that got shipped south and east to major cities to be refined and used for lamp fuel, lubricant, fire starter, what have you. They also shipped up north to be used to heat homes. Garland Grenor was an oil baron in every sense of the word, except he lacked a title. More recently, though, the desert town had experienced a boom of prospectors and had begun shipping lenses of everything from lumber to gold and fish. It was with one of these caravans hauling the bounty of Oregon that Jeb bought himself passage south to Solnath for a cool 5 bulbs. Long-distance travel in the Empire wasn't as easy or as safe as it was on Earth. The caravan wasn't interested in giving a human passage at first, but when he made the coins dance over his palm, they were willing to compromise. Mist cores made people dangerous. Jeb spent a lot of the time riding in the back of a wagon, just watching the dusty desert roll by. It was almost as hot in the shade as it was in the sun. Jeb felt for the Milas in the driver's seat, the hot sun beating down on him as he guided the draft animals. The draft animals seemed used to it. They were some kind of dark brown, thin-haired ungulates with proto-elephant noses. Like those fat pygmy things you see on the Discovery Channel every now and then. The comparison stopped there. The draft animals' noses were covered with teeth at the end, and they seemed pretty adept at biting holes in cactus before suckling as much moisture out of them as they could. The noses were always looking for something to latch onto, and more than once, he'd witnessed an irritated Milas driver bop a snout for being too inquisitive. The caravans were still figuring out their trade routes again, what with the stitching of large swaths of land into this strange quilt that was Pharos. Roads and trails that had existed previously now ended abruptly, forcing them to forge new roads. Sometimes they ended with a towering slice of mountain, and they had no choice but to find another way around. The most distinct thing was all the withering West Oregon landscape interlaced with the arid desert it'd been stitched with. Already, Jeb could see that most of the vegetation was dying, if not all the way dead, and the desert was slowly encroaching on the formerly human territory. Owing to the unrelenting heat, Jeb bit the bullet and figured out what a mountain river lens could do. Ice-cold water with only the occasional grit and algae. A real man doesn't filter his mountain water. He gets lockjaw and he likes it. Owing either to pure mountain spring water or simply Jeb's improved tolerance to disease, Jeb didn't feel any effect and kept drinking slash spraying himself with river water whenever the heat became intolerable, which was often. Much of the rest of his time he spent messing around with his new gold lenses. Jeb had disassembled the Fireball Luger for more legal transportation, keeping the mist engine and the wand itself as far away from each other as was practical. He popped the mist regulator out of the beautiful Revenge and rewired it into one of his gold lenses. The gold lenses were about the size of a dime, and they looked like a chip of white quartz streaked with a bit of gold in the center. If anything, they were quartz lenses with gold impurities, but whatever. Using the engine and regulator, Jeb was able to spit out over 100 pounds of quartz gravel rich with gold onto the floor of the wagon, which he then scooped up into the Blue Serpent furnace in 10-pound increments, heated and stirred until the individual materials began to separate based on their density. Once it cooled, Jeb flipped the whole thing over and peeled off the thin layer of gold on the top, tossing the hunk of slagged quartz out the back of the wagon. Over the course of an evening, Jeb made his fare back along with a little extra. Jeb had several of these lenses, and they didn't look like they would be exhausted anytime soon. With a little bit of effort, Jeb could get himself spending money whenever he needed it. In the immortal words of Forrest Gump, "That's good, one less thing." Satisfied that it was possible, Jeb set the lenses aside and worked on his other ideas. He identified each of the lenses with the appraiser, tossing the lens up into the gray cloud of roiling mist. With something as small as a lens, the mist actually seized on the item, lifting it into the air and making it part of the display. Jeb took the lumpy antler lens and tossed it up into the roiling cloud. "Rostag lens. Uncommon. Often considered pests where they come from, deer are tenacious survivors and delicious prey animals. This particular lens creates a powerful stag of the white-tailed deer species." Curious, Jeb took the lens outside at night and poured a drop of mist through it, and was gobsmacked when half a dozen tiny stags bolted in every direction. It was one thing to make worms of varying sizes, but seeing a familiar earth animal like a deer in miniature just brought back to mind exactly how strange all of this was. "It's a 12-pointer. Jeb muttered as they disappeared into the dark of night. "As long as nobody made any tiny does, that should be fine," Jeb thought as the foot-long stag scattered into the wilderness. "Annihilation lens mixed with fly lens makes void butterflies." Jeb eyed the big lump of antler in his hand. "What would happen with a buck? Might be something to see." Jeb still had a pinky-sized piece of annihilation lens along with some dust from the creation of the beautiful Revenge. It wasn't enough to mix with a stag lens big enough to make a full-sized deer. "I'll have to buy a couple more cleaning wands, and probably some slaves." Jeb chuckled at the idea of buying a sexy elf waifu, then kicking her out on her ass because he was more interested in the control lens in her collar. Come to think of it. In a flash of inspiration, Jeb had an idea for a gun that used annihilation lenses. All he had to do was attach a spring to the focal slider. Cock it back, setting the range to minimum, then pull the trigger, allowing a pulse of mist to travel through the lenses. The focal point rapidly shifts as the spring pushes the lenses together again, boring a hole in a straight line out of the gun. "I gotta write this down." Jeb scrambled back to his wagon and wrote down the idea before he forgot. Jeb was forced to write the idea down on a piece of leather because he forgot to buy himself a drafting journal.
Okay, when I get to the city, I'm definitely setting myself up as a mysterious and wealthy survivor of the hard difficulty and buying a place to work on my magic. And possibly kidnap children. Jeb's half-formed pseudo-plan involved buying a mansion with a huge basement, then disappearing orphan children, feeding and housing them in secret until the bad guy came sniffing around looking for the other Reaper horning in on his territory. That could work. Killers are notoriously territorial. It was also kind of a bad idea and a logistical nightmare. Jeb might be able to feed and care for them with magic, but he couldn't physically keep track of a couple dozen kids and still investigate. Pros. Bad guy comes to me, doesn't suspect me of hunting him at all. Cons. Screaming children, pissing and shitting everywhere, getting in my way and stopping me from doing my job. Wait. Slaves. Jeb grinned as the plan started to come together. If he wanted to come across as a wealthy serial killer, there was no better way to prove he was psycho than to buy some people. These purchased people could help watch his kidnapped children. I am such a nice guy. Jeb chuckled to himself, carrying on with his day. A week into the ride was far too long to go without conversation, and Jeb managed to strike up conversations with the driver on several occasions. This particular day, they were off-roading, and Jeb had the worst case of swamp ass, aggravated by the jostling of the wagon. How do you stand this heat? Jeb asked, popping his head out of the shade. What heat? The Milas driver asked, glancing down at him. Oh, well, that makes sense. Are humans a cold weather species? He asked, glancing up at the blazing sun. I hadn't thought so, but apparently. We like places around 72 degrees Fahrenheit, whatever that translates to in alien temp. Apparently the system translated for him because the driver scoffed. 72 degrees? That's nothing. So I noticed, Jeb said, ducking back into the shade. The Milas enjoy the oil-rich desert and volcano wilds, averaging 115 degrees, human temp. Damn, this must be balmy then, Jeb said. Indeed. Hey, Brav, Jeb called. Yo? The driver responded. What do your people know about kidnapping? Brav actually turned to stare at him, brow raised. Jeb couldn't overlook the possibility that human children were being taken by an alien. It was about 50-50 in Jeb's head.
Why?
I'm looking into missing kids for someone. Is it a common thing for Milas? Brav barked a short laugh.
Huh! Royal, no, it isn't common at all.
Why?
Milas babies light themselves on fire as a defense mechanism until they're 3 years old or so. They're dangerous to all but their mother. Same unique chemical reaction. Catching on fire from a flaming baby you're not directly related to is mildly poisonous.
Poisonous, not Bernie? You hazing me? Jeb asked.
You're serious? Of course. Piss off a Milas and you'll feel the heat.
How the... Wow. That explains a lot.
Why? What do your human infants do to protect themselves?
Scream really loud, I guess. They poop themselves and throw up, too.
Acid vomit?
Brav asked, eyeing Jeb cautiously. No, just regular vomit.
How on Pharos did you survive as a species?
Brav asked. I'm asking myself that right now, Jeb said, shaking his head before noticing something in the distance. Through the wobbling heat waves, Jeb was able to make out the distinct shape of a car. Hold up, Jeb said, banging on the wagon and crawling out into the open to ride shotgun. What is that?
A human construction of some kind?
Brav asked.
It's a car, Jeb said, jumping off the wagon and running for it. This way!
Is the human serious?
Another wagoneer called.
Come on!
Jeb called, motioning for them to follow.
Where there's cars, there's a road. With any luck, it'll be the interstate.
After a minute of running through the arid desert, the car resolved into a Plymouth Voyager propped up on a large boulder, where it had crashed when the driver vanished. Around the boulder, the road finally came into view. He could see where it had been stitched together with the Ferozian desert.
The I-5 in all its 8-lane glory, wide enough for half the wagons to travel along side by side. There were hundreds upon thousands of cars littering the road, but only a handful likely had their brakes on, so it would just be a matter of pushing them off the road. Come to think of it, I wonder if I could scavenge up some gas and get one of these babies running. I could get to Somnath in style.
What are you on the ba- Ugh.